A1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, Ashley and I will bring you stories along with Dan Novak and Brian Lynn. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, American drug maker Pfizer said on Wednesday that the third shot or booster of its COVID-19 vaccine will protect people against the Omicron variant of the virus. Pfizer and its German partner BioNTech said early lab tests show the booster increased levels of virus-fighting antibodies by 25-fold. The Pfizer research is early and has not been independently examined. A statement from Pfizer's top officer, Albert Bourla, said the two-shot vaccine still offers protection against severe disease caused by Omicron. But Bourla said, it's clear from these preliminary data that protection is improved with a third dose of our vaccine. The company also said it has started to develop a COVID-19 vaccine against Omicron. If needed, the new vaccine will be ready by March 2022. The findings are similar to a small study published by researchers at the Africa Health Research Institute in South Africa on Tuesday. The South African study also suggested that a third shot might help against Omicron infection. However, Reuters reported that a study at the University Hospital of Frankfurt, Germany, found reduced antibody levels against Omicron even after three shots. Independent experts have not reviewed the studies. Health officials still do not know how big of a threat Omicron really is. The Delta variant is still responsible for most of the cases, especially in the United States. Omicron was first identified in Africa on November 9th and reported to the World Health Organization on November 24th. 2 days later, the WHO designated it a variant of concern, or VOC. The agency said Omicron has a large number of mutations, some of which are concerning. A mutation is a change in the genetic material of a virus. The WHO added that early evidence suggests an increased risk of reinfection with this variant as compared to other VOCs. Several countries, including the United States, Brazil, Japan, and Israel restricted travelers from some African countries. But the variants have since been identified throughout Europe, North America, and Australia.
The COVID-19 pandemic has led to emptier coastal areas around the world. Animals like sea turtles have used the chance to reclaim the less polluted, quieter beaches to lay their eggs during the breeding season. The main breeding season for sea turtles goes from September to November. Workers from the Sindh Wildlife Group in Pakistan recently watched as a female turtle walked across the beach in Karachi late one night. She was looking for a place to lay her eggs. She buried 100 or more eggs in the sand before heading back out into the Arabian Sea. Sindh Wildlife counted 15,000 green turtles on Karachi's beaches last year. By comparison, the group counted between 8,000 and 8,500 in 2019. Pandemic-related lockdowns there had ended by the start of this year's breeding season. But animal experts still expect a large number of the endangered animals to visit. Green turtles are among the world's largest sea turtles. Adults can weigh more than 90 kilograms. They lay their eggs in more than 80 countries around the world, and can be found in more than 140 countries. They live in tropical and subtropical coastal areas. The conservation group Sea Turtle Conservancy says there are 85,000 to 90,000 nesting females worldwide. The weather in Karachi is good for egg laying as late as January. Wildlife officials there plan to keep looking for the animals until then. Ashfaq Ali Memon leads Sindh Wildlife's marine turtle unit. He said females have nested about 6,000 eggs so far this season. As soon as the mother turtle leaves the beach, workers hurry to dig out the eggs. They move them to a 1 meter deep hole in a hatchery until the babies come out of the eggs, about 40 to 45 days later. The new turtles are taken to the beach immediately and released into the sea. The Sindh Turtle Unit has released 860,000 turtle babies into the Arabian Sea since it began operating in 1970. Memon said that 900 have been released so far this season. Conservationists say that in the past, sea turtle populations were threatened by demand for their fat, meat, and eggs. In recent years, loss of habitat from pollution and land reclamation have also threatened the animals.
Japanese billionaire Yusaku Maezawa arrived for a 12-day stay at the International Space Station, or ISS, on Wednesday. The trip is the latest and the longest in a year of increasing space tourism. The businessman and his assistant, Yozo Hirano, left for the station in a Russian Soyuz spacecraft with Russian astronaut Alexander Mazurkin. Hirano went along to film the trip. The price of the trip has not been made public, but some reports say it costs some $50 million. The 46-year-old Maezawa had been training at a space center outside Moscow in recent months. "I would like to look at the Earth from space. I would like to experience the opportunity to feel weightlessness," Maezawa said Tuesday before the flight. "And I also have a personal expectation. I'm curious how the flight will change me, how I will change after this space flight." A company that organized the flight said Maezawa listed 100 things to do in space after asking the public for ideas. The list includes simple things about daily life, to maybe some other fun activities, to more serious questions as well, Space Adventures president Tom Shelley said. Maezawa made his money in clothes, creating Japan's largest online fashion site, Sozotown. Forbes magazine estimated his worth at $2 billion. He has become famous in Japan through his liking of private planes and sports cars, cash giveaways to Twitter followers, and famous girlfriends. Maezawa joins the list of billionaires who have recently paid for trips to space. Amazon founder Jeff Bezos and Virgin Group founder Richard Branson both went to space earlier this year. I'm Dan Novak.
Instagram has announced tools it says are designed to keep young users safe and help them limit time spent on the picture-sharing service. The announcement came the day before the head of Instagram, Adam Mosseri, appeared before American lawmakers to discuss measures to protect children online. Instagram is owned by Facebook, which recently changed its corporate name to Meta Platforms. Meta has been under increasing pressure from governments in several parts of the world to improve its safety and privacy policies to protect young users. In October, a former Facebook employee accused the company of ignoring research that suggested Instagram could cause body image issues and harm the mental health of users, especially girls and young women. Mosseri described the new tools in an online post this week. He said one change is that Instagram would aim to be stricter about the kinds of content it suggests to young people. In general, social media networks such as Facebook and Instagram are designed to offer and suggest content that users have shown interest in. This is a way to keep users coming back and staying online for longer periods. But Mosseri said Instagram plans to launch a new feature that will suggest that users move on to something else if they have been staying on one subject for a long time. This feature is still being developed and tested. Staying centered on one subject for a long period can cause users to make unhealthy social comparisons, said Philippa Dietrichs. She is a professor of psychology at Britain's University of West England in Bristol. She has been working with Instagram to find ways to improve the Instagram experience for young users. Dietrichs said suggesting to users to move on to another subject has been studied as a way to improve users' experiences online without compromising their freedom and personal choice. Another tool is called Take a Break. This feature sends a message to people who have been using Instagram for an extended period to consider taking a break from the service. In addition to the messages, young users will be urged to set their own reminders to take more breaks going forward. Take a Break is already live for Instagram users in the United States, Britain, Ireland, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. Instagram plans to launch the tool in the rest of the world early next year. Mosseri said Instagram was also turning off the ability for people to tag or mention young people who do not follow them on the service. And starting in January, young Instagram users will be able to easily remove all photo and video content at once, as well as any past likes and comments. Instagram says next March it will launch its first tools designed to give parents advice on how to discuss social media use with their children. The tools will let parents see how much time their children spend on the service and permit them to set usage limits. Republican Senator Marsha Blackburn criticized the company's new offerings as hollow. She said she sees the moves as an attempt by the company to turn attention away from past mistakes by rolling out parental guides, use timers, and content control features that consumers should have had all along. An Instagram spokeswoman said the service plans to continue its delay on the development of a planned child version of the service. The company suspended its plans for that project in September after facing intense criticism from major child rights groups as well as U.S. lawmakers. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. President Ulysses Grant served two terms in office. His administration was marked by corruption. The president himself was not linked directly to any of the incidents, but he was friends with dishonest members of the cabinet and Congress. Jack Weitzel and Tony Riggs tell how Grant's problems affected the Republican Party in the presidential election of 1876.
The American people were very disappointed with President Grant. He was the military hero of the Civil War. He had led the Union Army of the North to victory over the Confederate Army of the South. His popularity dropped, however, during his presidency. Grant was not an effective political leader, nor was he able to control the men around him. The American people also were worried about the nation's economic situation. A serious depression had begun during Grant's second term. Many people were out of work. They blamed the ruling Republican Party.
The state and congressional elections of 1874 were an important turning point. Republicans were shocked by the results. For the first time in 18 years, the Democratic Party won control of the House of Representatives. They won 169 seats. The Republicans won 109. Democrats also won control of 23 of the 35 state governments. These included several northern states where people were tired of Republican rule.
Important changes also were made in the South. Democrats won control of southern state governments from radical Republicans. One of these states was Mississippi. White Democrats there began organizing groups called White Leagues. These groups wanted to prevent blacks from voting for radical Republicans. They started riots in which many blacks were killed. They also used economic power against blacks. These efforts succeeded. Most blacks were too afraid to vote. The Democrats took control of both the Mississippi legislature and the governor's office. Similar actions with similar results took place in other southern states.
As Grant's second term came to an end, he began to talk about the possibility of another 4 years in the White House. Republican politicians were firmly opposed. They blamed Grant for the party's defeats in state and congressional elections. Grant had to give up any hope of a third term. Congressman James Blaine seemed to have the best chance of winning the Republican presidential nomination in 1876. Blaine had been Speaker of the House of Representatives when the Republicans controlled Congress. He was powerful, and he had many supporters. Some Republican leaders, however, questioned his honesty. Blaine fought this criticism with an emotional speech in Congress.
When the Republican Party convention opened in Cincinnati, Ohio, Blaine was the leading candidate for the presidential nomination. He expected to win the first day. There was a wild demonstration of support when his name was put before the convention. But before the voting could begin, the lights went out. Some delegates believed Blaine's opponents were responsible. These opponents worked all night to get other delegates to change their support from Blaine to another candidate. When the delegates voted the next morning, Blaine did not have enough votes to win the nomination.
However, after six ballots, Blaine appeared ready to win. To stop him, his opponents needed to unite behind another candidate. One of these candidates was Rutherford Hayes, the governor of Ohio. Hayes had fewer enemies than the other candidates, so he became the compromise candidate for delegates hoping to stop Blaine. On the seventh ballot of the convention, Rutherford Hayes captured the Republican nomination.
The Democratic Party met in St. Louis, Missouri. Delegates nominated Samuel Tilden, the governor of New York. Tilden had led the fight to end dishonesty in government in New York State. He had ousted a group called the Tweed Ring, which controlled New York City politics for years. Democrats said he was the man to end dishonesty in government in Washington. Republicans campaigned by denouncing the Democratic Party. They called it the party of Southern rebellion and treason. Instead, they said, vote for the Republican Party, the party that had saved the Union. Democrats campaigned by attacking Republican dishonesty. They blamed Republicans for the nation's economic problems, and they promised better times for everyone if their candidate was elected.
The presidential election of 1876 was very close. By midnight of Election Day, the results seemed to show that Democrat Samuel Tilden was the winner, Republican Rutherford Hayes went to bed believing he had lost. However, the Republicans quickly saw that the electoral votes of three southern states could decide the winner. In the American presidential system, whoever wins the most popular votes in a state usually gets all the electoral votes of that state. In 1876, the electoral votes of three states, Florida, Louisiana, and South Carolina, were enough to give the White House to one candidate or the other.
Each party claimed victory in these three states. Each accused the other of stealing votes and counting ballots unfairly. Finally, the two parties agreed to form an electoral committee to decide who had won the disputed votes. The committee was supposed to include seven Republicans, seven Democrats, and one independent. But before it could meet, the independent member resigned. A Republican took his place. The Republicans had a majority.
The committee first debated the disputed votes of Florida. After much discussion, the eight Republicans on the committee voted to accept the votes of Florida's Republican electors. They rejected a proposal to investigate the way the votes were counted in the state. They said there was not enough time for a full investigation. The same thing happened with the disputed votes of Louisiana and South Carolina. The Republicans on the committee voted to count the Republican electors. The Democrats voted to count the Democratic electors. In each case, the Republicans won by a vote of 8-7.
As a result, Rutherford Hayes gained the electoral votes of all three states. This gave him enough to win the election. Democrats were furious. Democrats in many states began organizing party militia groups. They said they would fight, if necessary, to prevent the Republicans from stealing the presidency. The situation seemed very tense and dangerous. Many feared the start of another civil war. Negotiations finally provided a peaceful solution.
Representatives of the two parties met secretly to work out a compromise. The Democrats agreed to permit Republican Rutherford Hayes to be sworn in as president. In return, Hayes agreed to end federal support of radical Republican governments in the South. He promised to name Southerners to his cabinet and other important jobs. And he said he would provide more federal aid for schools and railroads in the South. As part of the agreement, Hayes promised not to act aggressively to support the civil rights of black Southerners.
Hayes' opponent, Democrat Samuel Tilden, did not oppose the agreement. Tilden was an old man. His health was poor. He agreed that 4 years of Rutherford Hayes would be better than 4 years of civil war. So it was that Rutherford Hayes became the 19th president of the United States.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.